Blog Talk Radio.
Get in right with Dr. Velva Bowles. Hi, I say welcome to my radio listeners. If you are someone who's been looking for me for the last few weeks and I wasn't there, I apologize. But for those who'd like to join into the stimulating conversation about the reawakening of racial hatred in the United States, please dial in. You can have a conversation with me live at 347-945-6594. I will be very happy to talk with you and share your opinions as I share mine, and I welcome all comments. The thing that I'm finding today, this being Thursday, June 18, 2015, it is so very difficult to believe that this is almost a repeat of what happened during the days of the very active civil rights movement 50 years ago. I've had a lot of different discussions with persons saying, those days are dead, racism does not exist, America is not like that. Today, or actually yesterday's events, where a 21-year-old man left his residence area in Columbia, South Carolina, traveling south to Charleston, South Carolina, joined a group of worshipers in a church, sat through an hour or so of the church service, which I understand was a prayer service, then opened gunfire. 9 people were killed. There's so many ironies in this, first the incident itself, and then the reporting of it, that I don't even know where to start. First of all, the 21-year-old was born in 1994. If racism is dead in America, how can a 21-year-old have accumulated or manifest the kind of hatred he displayed? And it's not just by his killing someone. He was quoted by a survivor as saying, "I have to do it. You rape our women, and you're taking over our country, and you have to go." So in 1994, a child was spawned that has this belief. Not 1924, not 1944, not 1964, but 1994. If what is in the current discussions with civil rights workers and black appointed spokespersons for the black race or the black American in the United States, how could this happen? Someone born in 1994 should be totally naive that were expressed by this person. Dylan Storm Roof is the name that is identified. Walked into a church, Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopalian Church. And by the way, this is one of the nation's oldest black American congregations, dated back to 1891, and is registered and considered a historical significant church. This person came into the church at 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night, requested to sit near the pastor, who also, and this is the second issue I have, the pastor of this church is also a state senator. South Carolina State Senator Clementa Pinckney was referred to in this article that I read, and I read several, as either Mr. or Reverend. Never once was it identified that he is a state senator. I remember when the Arizona senator was shot at a mall or a speaking engagement, they called it an attempted assassination. It was very clear. We all knew it was a senator. But because this is being relegated as a hate crime, the news media did not see that it was necessary to also indicate a political figure was killed. It's called assassination everywhere, but in such a setting as the one we're looking at. Just because it's a hate crime did not erase the accomplishments of someone who was, yes, a minister, but also a senator. And at least four or five times, this is just my sensitivities, I watched how they referred to the person doing the shooting as the gunman, never a thug, never a criminal, but a gunman. When they addressed that he was white, they capitalized the W. He was white. But when they addressed the nine killed as black, it was a small case B. And I laugh because if you're going to use it as an adjective like white American or black American, yeah, a small case, it's a color. But when you use it as a designation of a people, why would white be a capitalized word and black not? So just little subtleties, even the writer, I was just floored. It was always Mr. Pinckney or Reverend Pinckney. But when they talked about the police chief, they identified his handle. When they talked about a person who was quoted, either the mayor or someone from the House of Representatives, they were given a political title. But I don't know if it was intentional to minimize that a state senator had been killed or assassinated. I don't know. But I couldn't help making the contrast of the circumstances of how this was reported. Also, in the people killed was the sister of the senator. Now, I don't have any kind of feelings one way or the other, whether you call it a hate crime or a assassination. But the bottom line is a state senator in the political party in these United States was slain and has been relegated to almost insignificance. Then the senator's sister was also killed. And the shooter has been identified as requesting the pastor to sit beside him. So I would like to see it equally debated. Is this an assassination of a South Carolina senator? And it happens that he was also a minister, so collateral damage where the parishioners present take a whole different spin. Is it necessary to minimize that a state senator has been assassinated along with another family member? And make it that a 21-year-old white male goes into a black historical church and slays nine people. Well, I'm left with more questions than answers. If they identify the gunman comes from Columbia, South Carolina, how would he know that Wednesday at 8 o'clock there is a prayer meeting in Charleston at this particular church? And in reflecting on that, it made me think about in the black communities, the black American communities that I've lived in, there's a certain kind of acceptance of everybody. Assimilation is really true. Some say because the skin color of the black American can vary from very, very high yellow, as it's sometimes referred to, all the way down to very dark ebony shades, that when someone shows up that is obvious in American's vernacular white, it's no big deal. Whereas when there were black people that showed up into the white environment, they feel uncomfortable and excluded, and there may be hostilities and aggravation, and that did not occur in the environments that I'm familiar with. In fact, whenever a situation occurred, and there was a major one when I grew up, it's the day a family friend's oldest daughter was gang raped, and this was in the early 70s, and the community identified the rapist as three white young men. Two of the young men were sons of prominent businessmen in the area, and I don't know if this case was ever prosecuted. I knew it was discussed numerous times, if you say in a living room, in our setting, and it was certainly just general knowledge. When the child was born, he was what the South called mulatto, or very bright skin. And the way in which the black family absorbed the child, they nicknamed him Butterball. Now, it is always interesting to me how the oppressed or the poor simply accepts what is dealt and makes the best of it. Butterball was not treated differently from anyone else. He didn't look the same complexion of his cousins and I guess it would be his uncles and aunts because the family was still relatively young. The girl was only 17 when he was born. So he grew up in a family nicknamed Butterball, was the result of a rape. And the sad story is that the young lady never recovered from this very aggressive situation. And at first she was just terribly depressed and became rather recluse. And I'm not sure if she turned to alcohol or drugs, but she faded. It simply, she was such a glowing star and had so much potential and then faded. I've lost touch with the family, so I don't even have a report on whatever happened to Butterball. But I do remember, as a young person, interacting with Butterball, knowing the story, and having watched the grandparents treat him like another family member. I'm saying all this to say that a white male walking into a church service at 8 o'clock in Charleston would not have stirred anyone up. Very likely, when he requested to sit near the pastor, who's also a state senator, no eyebrows went up. And when he sat down and shared more than an hour's time, according to the survivor, before starting to shoot again, he would have been welcomed. It would have been observed as someone joining into prayer service, and the black-white issue, very unlikely to ever have come up. Information says that he loaded and reloaded his gun 5 times. It doesn't say how many shots were fired. It doesn't identify what weapon was used. It does say 8 people were dead on the scene. 1 died on the way to the medical center. I don't really know how to feel. When I first read it, it made me remember of the bombings in Atlanta, reports of children being maimed and injured. My memory serves me right, there were 2 incidents of bombing. It also made me remember of Edgar being shot down in his driveway as he got out of his car. And when you think about that, that's 50 years ago. The gunman, in this case, his parents may not have been born. What's going on, America? I wonder if Zimmerman will come and pay for the defense of Dylan Storm Roof the way he did for the shooter. I'm sorry, the Koch brothers that supported the shooter in Florida. I'm born in the United States. Born in North Carolina. In fact, where they captured or arrested the shooter was Shelby, North Carolina. Shelby made the news. That's where I was born. It's not a large town. I can only imagine why he traveled to Shelby, North Carolina, but I wasn't surprised when it said someone called the police when they recognized that there was a foreign vehicle in the area. Yes, Shelby's that small that if you drive through, there's someone watching, someone who knows every car that passes that street and every what time they usually pass. There would be a number of people who would almost tell you who's at what hotel and whose son, daughter, cousin, uncle, niece has come to visit some relative. Not a big town at all. So his being arrested in Shelby, North Carolina doesn't surprise me because his difference, even being a white male in Shelby, North Carolina, which is white dominant, that he was a stranger to the area would have made him conspicuous. Every time the new year comes in, and particularly when we celebrate or when the nation declares the celebration for Martin Luther King Jr., there's a proclamation of his, I have a dream, and reaching for the goal, and all of those words. The statue, and what made me smile when I thought of this, is the statue that was presented for Martin Luther King is unfinished. It's a man coming out of the granite. It's as if the artist had begun sculpturing a statue and stopped. And what was left is this corner of stone. And it conjures to me what I have to admit is most probably true. Martin Luther King was a powerful speaker and a powerful man who started young and died young fighting the apartheid in the United States of America. The press has presented him in all kinds of ways, and certainly J. Edgar Hoover tried to present him in all kinds of ways, so that now if you go and see the statue, the impression of his job never got finished because he never broke free of the rock, concrete, the weighing down. 2015, United States of America. You can be in prayer. As many in America would say, the Christian praying, protection of God, the guardian angel, the sacred place, the sanctuary. Sanctuary opened its doors and invited in the murderer, allowed the murderer to seat himself beside the leader of the church. 2015 in these United States of America, land of the free, land of the brave. I don't know if there's going to be any revision song, but I know the hesitancy in inclusion of the Black American in the Constitution of the United States is glaring. There are amendments, there are acts, but nowhere has there been an intentional inclusion. Persons coming from other countries who nationalize the United States have more rights with respect to business development, tax-free status, and assistance than those born on this soil for over 600 years. I traveled in February to talk with some people who are very progressive. They call themselves social activists, and they have some recognition nationally. They've had some success in going out and protesting and requesting. And in my conversation with the group, I said, it's past time that the United Nations were not one that took up the fight of the Black Americans. Black Americans have suffered and still suffer, are mistreated. And no one, not a national cry, is heard. When the Nigerian girls were kidnapped, someone got the voice out there and cried out, this is not okay. The world doesn't sit idle when this is happening. Well, it's past time that the world looked at the United States of America. I know that for so many years, in so many ways, Americans have what they call lead the fight for justice and freedom and democracy. And we've entered into all kinds of international politics. We either do it financially or we send over various people for negotiations and we reward those we endorse and punish those we do not. When does United States of America get a report card? When does someone look at what's going on and say, how can you determine good and bad and freedom and democracy when you endorse, authenticate the very same types of injustices that you want to eradicate? When I think of South Africa and apartheid and how everybody was saying Mandela had come to presidency and, oh, it's no longer this way or that way, in the article, or one of the articles I read, the gunman in the case of the Charleston, South Carolina shooting had a Facebook page, and he was championing the apartheid symbols for South Africa and what is now Zimbabwe, and it was known as Rhodesia. So just having the symbolic meaning of white superiority allows even young minds, someone born in 1994, to become so corrupt, to build such hatred, that walking into a church and sharing religious services didn't prevent him from killing the very voice who sat next to him, who was advocating that which is Christian and biblical teaching. It's hard to keep watching, becoming aware of things that's happening in these United States. In South Carolina, as you may or may not have followed, there was a shooting. A police officer shot a black man in the back twice, and it was caught on camera. I lived in Charleston, South Carolina in 1999 through 2001. And I attended church in Charleston, South Carolina, and I was familiar with Emmanuel. I happened to have gone to Morning Star. And I can very well understand what the fear, the sense of betrayal, the hurt the people would have felt in Charleston about 9 o'clock, Wednesday night. I also remember there was an active state NAACP leader, NAACP, National Advancement of Colored People Association, National Association of American Colored People. I always get that wrong because I don't know why we kept the colored people part, but I guess colored people is appropriate. I don't know. They organized a crusade, a travel, to protest the flag in the state of South Carolina. And in case you don't know, the Confederate flag is part of the South Carolina flag. Look it up. I didn't post it in my site. I may go back and do that. And the protest was, how can you advocate a unity of state and represent all people here and have on the flag a representation of what divided this nation? That when there was a civil war, that flag belonged to the other side. But my feelings while in South Carolina were that being part of the Confederate nation was very good, very strong, very positive. Many people, not just in the reenactment of Civil War, but in general philosophy and general thinking. And no one speaks openly about the significance of the Confederacy flag and how it has, I guess you'd say, evolved into a symbol. If this young man who killed 9 black Americans could see in the flags from South Africa what he professed, then I present that anyone who is waving the Confederate flag, posting the Confederate flag, respecting the Confederate flag, also are manifesting the same kinds of retention of old times, wanting it back like it was. And this is shown, in my opinion, by the very state that refused in the article to identify that one of their senators had been assassinated. I would have thought the caption would have read, Senator Clemente Pinckney assassinated in church service in Charleston, South Carolina. And then let it progress to say that they're considering this a hate crime. But it's almost a denigration of a senator's entire career to have him demunitized, to be simply stated in passing he also was a state senator. It never put it in caps. His title was never presented on him in the writings that I read. And I had to go and look him up and identify what positions he had and what kinds of voting ideologies he had but the articles neglected to represent the state of South Carolina having the senator being assassinated. I find that just as racist, in my opinion, if you want to talk about racism. It was a very biased way of presenting the whole story. It kept it in one perspective instead of allowing the entire story to be explored. It was more than 9 people dying in a church. It was more than a 21-year-old coming and taking service with someone and then turning out to be the murderer. It was more than that. But in the United States of America, when the first reported, the spin is already made. You don't have a chance to evaluate the situation without the broad stroke of the writer, of the penman. I in several articles, got the feeling that the chief of police got a lot of imagery. He said, and 17 hours later, and it was a lot of quotations to elevate the concept that the chief of police was working hard. There was a quoting of the mayor's comment, and there was a comment that Hillary Clinton had even been in Charleston prior to the shooting on that same day. And in all of that extra information, Senator Clemente Pinckney never had his title placed before his name, nor was his death presented as an assassination of a political figure. I don't know much about the 21-year-old man who did this. I do know that what he did should highlight in the United States that we've now gone into not just months, but a counting of years that black men in the United States have been targeted, shot, choked, hazed. And the news media reports any kind of frustration or anger as thugs, thieves, hooligans. I don't know how much more a people in these United States are meant to bear. 50 years is a long time. If the nation is to celebrate Martin Luther King, and they put movies out about Selma, Alabama, then there's a problem if a 21-year-old man can still have the sentiments that were shown 50 years ago. He epitomizes the concept of it's still here, and it's reawakening that there's now a repeat. There's been a comment that the only way you don't get history repeated is you keep aware of it. You have to learn it. You have to stand on it. While I'm making a call out, this is just too similar to what happened almost 50 years ago, black Americans. It's as if things went quiet, but it didn't die. There's a difference. I was watching one of the movies where they said, you should be careful. Hello, you're a caller? Hello? Hello, are you a caller? Well, I thought I had a caller, but we're at the end of this conversation. So, hello? Hello? Or I didn't do it in time. Either way, we're coming to a close on this episode, but I would love to have had a conversation. Caller, I'm sorry if you had a comment and I missed you. But I would tell all of you, we need to take it to heart and look deep and see what motivations we're acting on. So until next time, I would say, take care.